Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, January 27th, 2012. I am your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined today by two writers who are only 4 or 5 days from freedom. We have Kelly Price, first-timer, and we have Brian Holt.
How's it going, everybody?
All right, so yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about on recruiting today. This is going to be a two-part show because we're also going to do some basketball after that. We're going to get Booth and Watson there, so with so much on the table, we're just going to get right into it. Okay, so we're just a couple days away from signing day now. So with, what, was it 4 days, 3 days? It's Monday, right?
Yeah.
All right, so with Monday right around the corner, let's talk about some of the players who are still on the fence that we need to be keeping an eye on as we approach signing day. Who are some of the big names I need to be keeping an eye out for?
There's a lot of guys. I mean, Florida's kind of, you know, playing a little bit of a risky game going in, you know, putting a lot of eggs in the basket of guys who are signing day commitments. Some guys you need to look for on signing day especially are, you know, Nelson Agholor is a five-star wide receiver out of Tampa. A guy, you know, Florida's chased real hard for a few years now, so that's very big. Another guy's Tracy Howard, five-star cornerback out of Miramar. You know, both of these guys are guys that kind of toggled in and out of how interested they really are in Florida and things like that. Those are the two big ones. And then if you're looking at commitments, you know, Dante Fowler Jr., a guy who's been committed to Florida State for forever, seems to keep kind of bouncing back and forth between, you know, Florida and Florida State, where he actually wants to end up. And he's going to make an announcement on signing day. So, you know, that's just a few to look at. There's, I believe, like 9 or 10 targets Florida has that are committing on signing day. Or, you know, in the case of Stephon Diggs, who's probably going to be making a decision about 9 days after signing day. You know, those are the main guys to look for right now.
So let's talk about some of these guys individually and where you think Florida's odds are landing them. At the top of the Inside the Gators exclusive Brian Holt big board, we have Tracy Howard, the five-star here. So you have his odds at 90%. Is that, you stick with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Tracy's a guy who, like I said, he's kind of toggled around between the big three schools in the state of, you know, which one's going to be his leader. And it seems like Florida's the one that, you know, came in the strongest and came in the latest. So that's where he seems to be sticking right now, talking to, you know, all the other guys who are with him. He's, you know, good friends with guys like, you know, Marcus May and all these other different guys who are already in the class. And they, you know, don't see him going anywhere other than Florida. It doesn't, you know, he had a very good official visit this past weekend. And, you know, it just really seems like Florida's kind of dialed in and really kind of taking things home for him, where that hadn't always been the case, you know, over the summer and early in the fall.
Kelly, are you hearing the same things about him? Is that what you're feeling?
I mean,
are?
Yeah, I don't want to completely reiterate but what you just said, but I definitely think he's solid on Florida right now.
How important is he to this team? How big of an ad would this be?
I think it'd be huge. He would be a huge grab for the secondary, I think, is probably his biggest shot at being an impact for Florida.
Yeah, I mean, he's big because of, you know, the weaknesses Florida has in other areas. I don't think he's nearly the most important guy on that list of, you know, names that you'd be looking at right now, because they already do have a guy like Brian Poole committed, who's, you know, a hell of a cornerback, a really good, you know, prospect and things like that. And they obviously, cornerback is the one area where it seems like they do have a little bit of depth right now with Roberson and guys like that. So, I mean, he's important just because of how good of a player he is. I don't know if he's the most important because of all the needs they have.
We can go through all the names on this list, but who is the most important player that you think they're still targeting and is still up for decision?
I mean, right now, how long has it been since Florida's really created a major playmaker at receiver? I mean, they just haven't. Obviously, people are going to point to offensive and defensive line as, you know, the fundamental needs of this recruiting class. But, you know, a guy like Stephon Diggs is somebody who could come in here and be the kind of playmaker that Florida just really hasn't had, you know, probably since, you know, Percy Harvin. I hate to always keep dating these guys back to Percy Harvin. But just, you know, the possibilities that he has and the ceiling that he has, I mean, that's something that if Florida somehow lost out on, that'd be a huge loss.
Yeah.
I mean, they really need a guy like that in this class.
As far as his leaning towards Florida, I think he's definitely leaning towards Florida. I mean, he tweeted during his official visit, "I just love the thought of being a Gator," and I think he's definitely leaning towards Florida, so that would be a big, like you said, a big grab for Florida.
We talk about potential receivers. Another guy on the list is the Agholor.
The Agholor.
Holt's favorite. So what's up with him? Where's he likely to end up?
You know, there's a lot of rumors that have come up late about, you know, is he going to skip out on Florida and go to USC, all these different things. And, you know, people are acting like that's kind of new, but at the same time, we've heard a lot of the same things about Nelson, or the Agholor, as we call him here in the office, you know, since June or July. You know, Marcus May is one of his best friends, and he's told me all along that it's UF and USC. Those are the kind of two schools fighting for his services. And, you know, the thing about him is he's one of these guys who plays the recruiting process very quietly. He doesn't talk a whole lot. He doesn't do all these things that a lot of other guys do. So whenever there's a lack of news in recruiting, people tend to just kind of make things up, it seems like. So that seems to be, you know, what's coming with a lot of this USC stuff. I haven't heard, you know, a lot of ground to it. I know he, you know, is taking an official visit there and is interested in those kind of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, I see him ending up in this Florida class.
How do you compare Diggs and Aguilar as players from what you know about them, what you've read, what you've seen even? I don't know if you guys have had a chance to catch these two in person.
I mean, I haven't seen either in
I've seen both in person a decent amount. As far as how they stack up, I personally think Diggs is the guy who's ready to come in right away and be a contributor at receiver. He's much more polished. He's much more fundamental, where Nelson Aguilar, not to downgrade him at all, but he's one of these guys that you watch his highlight film and you're just like, okay, he's running all over the field. He's making these crazy plays. Where if you watch Diggs, he's doing the same things, but he's also very good with his route running, very good with his hands. You know, he's a very polished receiver, and that's something that Nelson hasn't had the benefit of becoming because he played at a very small private school where they're just trying to get him the ball any way possible, and they don't have a quarterback to get him the ball, so they're handing it off to him. So he's been playing running back this whole time, where Diggs has strictly been able to lock in at receiver because he's from a school with a lot of other talent on the field.
I'd agree. I've seen some clips from Diggs. His fundamentals seem to be a lot more solid just because he has had time and experience in that position. Like you said.
That's the toughest thing with receivers is generally is, you know, when you're the best athlete in high school, they're going to throw you a running back just so there's the least amount of things to do as possible, where Diggs plays Our Lady of Good Counsel that's put out guys like Jelani Jenkins and, you know, Wes Brown this year and all these guys. So there's a lot more talent so he can play his role individually and not have to, you know, just be the best athlete on the field.
Another five-star name I'm seeing on the list of potential recruits that could land at Florida come signing day is Darius Hamilton here, and he's a guy with Greg Schiano leaving Rutgers to become the coach of the Bucks, which we can talk about later if you want, being a Bucks fan. But do you think that changes the likelihood of where he lands, and does that help Florida at all?
You know, obviously that's a question that got asked a whole bunch yesterday when it was reported that Schiano was going to the Bucks. There was kind of an interesting situation, actually, where Schiano was supposed to meet with Darius Hamilton yesterday morning and just kind of no-showed it, apparently. And it was right before the news broke to the Bucks and things like that, so that's obviously not the greatest PR move for, you know, Schiano or Rutgers. But I don't know if it makes that much of a difference. I mean, I won't be surprised if Hamilton ends up in Florida's class, but at the same time, I don't know if it's because of this move. You know, he's a New Jersey kid. If he decides to go to Rutgers, it's because he wants to be close to home, and he wants to play, you know, for the nearest school to him. I don't think it really had that much to do with Schiano.
What do we know about him as a player and how he would fit in here if UF can manage to land him?
I mean, he's definitely a guy who, you know, he's going to be listed as an end. He's probably going to come in as an end. But anyone who knows his dad, Keith Hamilton, used to play for the Giants. You know, he's a guy who's probably going to put on a lot of size, and there's a lot of talk about him, you know, possibly moving inside, being a three technique kind of player. And, you know, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think, you know, he's a big, powerful pass rusher, and he's got good speed for his size, but I do think he could benefit down the road by putting on a little bit more bulk and, you know, moving inside, being a defensive tackle.
And then the last big name I see on the list of potentials is Josh Harvey Clemens here. Don't like his chances as much, it seems. What do you guys have been hearing about him?
Yeah, I feel like Georgia has made a really late push for him, more so than Florida has, I think. They've kind of led the end rush towards this, and I know Muschamp went to church with his family, and that kind of caused a whole big deal. And but I kind of put him as going towards Georgia. I think you could technically flip a coin, but I think Georgia's got this a little bit more.
It's funny, you know, Muschamp used to coach at Valdosta State, and you could tell he is pulling out every Valdosta card that he possibly has to try and get Clemens. He's speaking at like a Valdosta Sports Commission meeting next week. Brian White is speaking actually at the Lounge banquet. So they're pulling out all the stops, but it really is starting to seem like a lost cause with Clemens. You know, they've kind of bounced around with interest, but I expect him to go to Georgia. Florida State's a school that used to be in the mix for him, and seems, you know, it's rumored that they're making another big push for him late, but there's a lot of things there with kids who have come out of Lounge and gone to Florida State, and a lot of those guys haven't exactly been the world's most upstanding citizens at Florida State. So
the criminals, as people like to call them.
A lot of his family's just not crazy about him being around some of those guys who came from Lowndes who are now getting in a little bit of trouble at Florida State, the Greg Reeds of the world and things like that. So, you know, that's kind of the rumors, and I kind of expect him to end up in Georgia.
I definitely see him not defying the whole, like, staying at home trend, because that's a big thing that's been happening a lot recently, and I think that he's definitely going to stay in Georgia.
Right. Now, listeners will understand that I don't follow recruiting very closely, so are there any other big names on this list that we need to touch on before he talks about some guys who are already committed?
On the exclusive Brian Holt
big board. Any other you're particularly looking forward to finding out about come February 1st?
I mean, you kind of rattled off all the big five-star type prospects and things like that. You know, it seems like they're putting a ton of emphasis on these guys and laying off on, you know, a couple weeks ago I was really interested to see where a guy like Courtney Gardner was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
He was a junior college receiver, appeared to be like a backup plan for Aguilar and Diggs, and Florida pretty much completely backed off of him. Mm-hmm. They've done the same with, you know, a few other guys, and so it's a situation where it'll be interesting to see how they close out on the line, especially because they really do need, you know, at least for depth, another good defensive lineman, another good offensive lineman.
Well, who are the names from this list that would be the best to get on either side?
Well, Meter. Offensive line, Jake Meter is a kid out of Indiana who is, you know, probably the most likely choice on the offensive line right now. He used to be committed to Ole Miss and has kind of taken a big interest in Florida lately. It's kind of between them and Missouri still, of exactly where he wants to end up. And on the defensive line, you know, it's going to come down to guys like Hamilton, but also, you know, some guys who could be backup plans for Josh Harvey Clemens. And there's a guy named Junior who's a recent Georgia Tech decommit who, you know, is supposedly showing interest in Florida right now, but it's a little undeveloped. That just kind of popped up.
All right. And then, Kelly, do you have any other names that you're keeping an eye on for Monday that
we're
still unsure about at this point? We haven't talked about already.
I mean, not really. Kind of Meter. I'm kind of interested to see where he's going to end up. But most of these other names are pretty much kind of, you can tell where they're going. I think it's interesting. I just wanted to note that Florida's been making huge pushes for these big names that are going to commit on signing day. And they're kind of, like you said earlier, very big risk on that because they're letting people like Courtney go away when, you know, Aguilar could totally commit to USC, and Diggs could totally not commit to Florida, and, you know, so I think it's interesting that they chose to make that decision and that risk.
People ask me about these guys, and it sounds like I'm being lazy to just push guys off and be like, we'll find out on signing day, but at the same time, I mean, a lot of people just don't know these things until signing day, and it's a huge risk, you know. Florida could either walk away in mint condition on signing day, or they could really find themselves in trouble because they're not landing some of these guys that they think they're going to land.
True. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, then, since it's all speculation at this point, we'll talk about some of the guys that are already committed. Okay. According to Rivals, they're the number 4 class, which just really generally, would you guys say Florida did well in recruiting? Is it about what you expected, or did they get a lot of the guys they were going after?
I think they've done a really great job this year. I think they've gotten more than just people in Florida. They've gotten tons of North Carolina commits, which is kind of crazy and random, but I think they've done a huge, great job. I think Muschamp's done a really good job of saying, you know, you guys are coming in and going to help this team develop. I think, you know, they're not thinking of this team as, like, 7-6 and, like, you know, the team that they were this past season in 2011. I think they're looking more as a team of 2012 and what kind of impact can I make? And I think Muschamp's done a really great job kind of culling that image and making them all kind of believe in this class that's coming in. I think he's done a great job.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different facets where you look at it and say, you know, that's a little surprising that they've done as well as they have just off
definitely.
You know, coming out of, I mean, Florida looks very misguided right now as a program. It's obviously really hard times the last couple of years. And to still be able to sell it the way that they have and sell the fact that, you know, they've really gone out of their way to sell a brand instead of a team and say that, you know what, this is Florida and it's going to get back to where it is. And you can either be here when that happens or you're not going to be here when that happens. And, you know, using that, they've done, you know, a very good job this class. I think one of the things they've really done a really good job of is focusing on the needs that they have. You know, Will Muschamp obviously emphasized so much all season, you know, Greg, you know, about just how important it is to be stout on the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball. And that's, I mean, he backed that up 100% coming into this recruiting season. He's gone all out on defensive linemen. It hasn't been as successful on the offensive line, but he has tried. And, you know, the two guys that he has landed at this point are both guys who could easily come in and contribute, you know, about as soon as a college player can on the offensive line. So I think they've done a very good job of not only bringing in good players, but bringing in needs. You know, some of these guys aren't guys that are being recruited by everybody in the country or they're highly desired, but when you look at a team like Alabama, a lot of their commits aren't guys that are being recruited by everybody in the country or desired. It's, you know, it's all about, it's about having an eye for what your team needs and then being willing to develop those guys once they get in.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the positions that they needed, and you mentioned both lines of scrimmage. And other ones that stood out to me and that we talked about when we did the recap podcast was wide receiver. We talked about some of those guys. But the running backs, too. Is there anybody that they've brought in this year that you think has a shot to really contribute to the running back rotation right away next season?
I think Matt Jones is going to have a huge impact. I mean, I think he reminds a lot of people of James Wilder Jr. And I think that he's a very physical player, maybe even more so than Wilder. And I think he's going to have a chance to make a huge impact, especially, you know, with Dempsey and Rainey leaving, obviously. And, I mean, Florida's really hurting at that position, and so he's definitely going to have a chance to, you know, start there.
I'm going to give a little bit of a different take on that. You know, there was a period during the fall where it really looked like Florida was set at running back, having Mike Davis and Matt Jones. To me, Mike Davis was always the guy who was more ready to come in and contribute right away and was going to be, you know, a factor as a freshman. And I just see Matt Jones as a little bit more of a project. You know, the way he runs, the things he does, he doesn't always seem to use his size as well as he can. And it's one of those things where once he gets everything ironed out and, you know, learns how to use what he has, I think he'll be a very good back. But I just don't see that happening next year. I don't see him coming in and being, you know, a major factor right away, where before Mike Davis decommitted and, you know, ended up committing to South Carolina, I really saw him as being a guy that was
definitely
ready to step right in and make an immediate impact, probably be a starter as a freshman. And, you know, Matt's just not quite a guy that I see being able to do that. And then Davis really put him in a bad spot because he committed very late in the game. And so then they had to try and play catch-up with all these running backs who had gotten more interest from other places, and it just hasn't panned out. They haven't gotten anyone to turn the tide. They tried Wes Brown, who is Stephon Diggs' teammate, and he kind of gave him a little bit of a, well, you came here over the summer to see Stephon, and you didn't talk to me then. Why do you want to talk to me now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of the situation that they got thrown into once Mike Davis left. So that's obviously, you know, if you're pointing out to me the two things where Florida could be disappointed at the end of this, I think it's in only bringing in one back in Matt Jones, and also possibly if they don't add more onto the offensive line, the depth at offensive line.
Yeah, I was going to say offensive line is definitely hurting. I mean, they're really stacked at D-line in this class, and it's kind of interesting, the contrast between that and the offensive line. There's not that many commits for that. So, like you said, that's definitely, backs and offensive line are definitely the two needs that were not totally met in this class.
Well, you said, I want to go back to something Holt said, where you said Matt Jones is going to need a little time to kind of adjust, and you don't think he's going to start right away. What are the things that you think he has to get ironed out before he's ready to contribute? Because, I mean, right now it's him and Gillislee and maybe Mack Brown, so he's definitely going to have a shot at it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, his biggest strength right now is just his pass-catching ability. I think he'd be one of their better options catching out of the backfield. But at the same time, I mean, like I said, he's a big back. When you look at him, he looks like he could be a linebacker or something like that. He just doesn't always run with that. He runs upright. He doesn't always, you know, make the moves that you'd expect to see out of that kind of a back. The couple times I've seen him in person, he's had a little bit of fumble troubles. And, you know, the other issue that he has had as well are injuries. And that's something he missed a big chunk out of the start of this past season, you know, with an Achilles tendon injury. It never really seemed to recover from it. I think he was, I definitely think he was brought back too soon from that injury. I saw him his second game back, and it was one of these things where he busts through the line of scrimmage, gets out into open field, and he's limping. And it's like, you know, that's not something you want to see.
Right, yeah.
The guy that you're expecting to come in and contribute as a freshman, where it just didn't feel like he ever really got through that injury. There were a lot of different things with it, too. I mean, he was always a real talkative recruit, and then right around the time of that injury, he pretty much stopped talking to any reporters. And there's just a lot of little things that kind of happened around it that, you know, make me wonder exactly where he's going to be, you know, health-wise, performance-wise, coming into Florida.
Very interesting. All right, well then, I guess we can get into some of these individual names, because we've already talked about position groups. First name on the Rivals list here, one of the five stars that's already committed, is Jonathan Bullard. Talk a little bit about what he brings, where he seems to fit into this defense, where you imagine he'll end up playing.
I mean, I think he's got great size. He has great run defense. I think he's going to be a guy that Florida's going to, you know, be able to use a lot, especially in his freshman year. So.
Yeah, he's about as college ready as any of these defensive ends that are, you know, coming out of his 2012 class. And I expect him to come in and contribute right away, you know, as kind of a half finesse, half power pass rusher, and then also being able to stop the outside runs and things like that, getting outside the tackles. I see him being able to come in and, you know, really make an impact right away. And we talked to Dan Quinn at the end of the season about, you know, Shreve Floyd wanting to move back inside and those kind of things. And he said, well, he can hold his horses on that until we get somebody that can fill, you know, the role that he was playing last season. I really think Bullard is a guy who can step into that role mm-hmm. and help Shreve out, help Shreve get back to where he wants to be. And, you know, it's going to be tough. It's always tough to get, you know, defensive linemen or anyone that close to the ball into the game their freshman year.
Right.
But if there's anyone in this class who can do it, I really believe Jonathan Bullard will be able to do it. You mm-hmm. know, you have to see whether it pans out. I mean, Easley and Floyd were the same type of hyped up guys. And
yeah, it took them a year.
Contribute a little bit, you know, towards the end of their freshman years, but they weren't, mm-hmm. you know, stable linemen like, you know, Bullard could very well be expected to be this season.
Right. Mm-hmm. So do you see him as more of a 4-3 end, or is he a 3-4 end, or is he can he even play buck a little bit? Like, where is he likely to line up in this defense?
They're not looking at – I mean, he's not one of the guys that's being looked at as buck. I see him being mm-hmm. more of the 4-3 type guy, you know, just to have that kind of presence on the outside. I really think, you know, he has a good shot of coming in and being in that spot. He's not the hybrid kind of guy. He's more of a – you know, more of a power lineman than some of these other options, like the Dante Fowlers of the world and stuff, who are being recruited as bucks, you know. Mm-hmm. He's more of your prototypical defensive end that's going to come in and contribute in that way.
All right, gotcha. So then a guy he'll probably line up against in practice if they both end up here is DJ Humphreys, the other five-star that's currently committed. Only 2 5-stars right now. We'll see what happens on signing day. But talk a little bit about Humphreys. With the struggles you have had at offensive tackle last year, you would think there's a chance he could play right away.
I mean, he's a lineman, but he definitely moves like a defensive end. He's needs to bulk up a little bit, but he definitely has a great frame the way that he moves. I mean, he's a pure athlete. I think he's a great athlete. I don't know.
Yeah,
what do you say?
He's going to be expected to throw on about 30 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's on campus now, so he has the jump start of being here for a semester mm-hmm. before everybody else.
It's
and they did purposely tell him, we don't want you gaining weight your senior season. We don't want you gaining weight at home. We want to make sure that we're putting the right kind of weight on you and things like that. So they told him to hold off on all that until he gets here. And, you know, he's a guy, great technique. If you watch his film, I don't know if there's another recruit in the nation, you know, by a position basis that was impressive as he has been, you know, the last couple of years of high school ball. He was a dominating, you know, left tackle in high school. And all signs seem to point toward him getting that shot again, you know, his freshman year at Florida, as long as he is able to put that weight on and still remain, you know, the same kind of blocker he was, because he's the kind of guy that they're going to have to take advantage of if he pans out at all the way they're expecting him to, because, you know, he could easily be a three and out kind of lineman just off of the pure talent he has and technique and everything.
And then according to the Rivals measurements, just for perspective, he's 6'5", 265,
he's
and you would...
basketball player.
Ideally, you would have a guy up around 300 for that for the line.
Like I said, he's been told about 30 pounds is what they would like.
Is it feasible that they can do that before the season? I don't, like, what's the history with this in terms of, because I know Xavier Nixon was the guy where they talked about coming similar things where he was an athletic guy and just didn't have all the weight on him, and we know that one didn't turn out as well. So give the people some hope.
It's not entirely unique to bring a lineman in like this. I mean, linemen typically aren't 300 pounds at most high schools and things like that. So, you know, it's a little bit of a wild card. I mean, how does he react to putting that kind of weight on? Can he put that weight on for the season? You know, a guy like Xavier Nixon did play his freshman year, but it wasn't right at the start of his freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see how exactly ready he is by the time summer clears and fall starts mm-hmm. to come around. And more specifically, I mean, at the size he is right now, is he going to be just getting dominated in spring practice? How is this going to look? And, you know, I'd love to have an answer one way or the other of, yes, it's going to be great once he puts weight on, or no, it's not. But the truth is everybody kind of handles putting on 30 pounds differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, he seems to have the frame to where he would be able to handle it well, but it certainly wouldn't be the first time that somebody, you know, couldn't handle it well.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I do think he's in a great advantage, though, being here already and being enrolled in spring. I think he's definitely going to have an advantage. But like you said, it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not that actually pans out.
Yeah, I mean, Florida has some guys that are coming in over the summer and are telling me that they're going to gain 20 pounds before the start of the season.
That seems
which
a little
is kind
much.
Of,
yeah.
That's not going to happen.
That's just going to eat a lot, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, but... Another guy who doesn't appear to have to worry about putting on weight is this Jessamine Dunker character, who is... what do I have here? 6'6", 315? What do we know about him?
Justin Dunker does not need to put on any more weight. That is what you need to know about Justin Dunker. Is he... It's recently changed. He had been listed as an offensive tackle for a long time on Rivals and other sites, and he had no idea why. He's always been a guard.
Gotcha.
So he's a natural guard. I mean, he is, you know, size-wise and everything, he could possibly be as ready, if not more ready, because of size, to come in and play right away.
Yeah.
You know, than DJ Humphreys, and he's a guy who played at a lesser-known high school, so there are some questions around that. But then he went out to, you know, Under Armour Week and performed very, very well, was, you know, graded very highly all week. Everybody had good things to say about him. And, you know, kind of coming in and filling that guard spot that could be a little bit of a question with, you know, some guys leaving and everything. You know, I think he's a guy who there's, you know, probably a handful of guys in this class who legitimately have a chance to come in and, you know, be major factors right away. And I do believe Justin Dunker's one of them.
I think, like you said, the fact that he's coming from a smaller high school, his fundamentals aren't as solid as some other people, but he definitely does have a great physical blocking ability. He has a great ability to create running lanes, and I think that he, like you said, definitely is going to have a chance to compete.
Fundamentals can't come easier than 30 pounds, though.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the list. I see four DBs here. We have Marcus May, Brian Poole, Willie Bailey, and Raheem Ledbetter. Any of these guys jump out to you as somebody who could contribute here their first year? What do we know about them as players?
There's kind of a mix there of, I would say, two major factors and two probably guys that are a little bit more projects. You know, I think Marcus May and Brian Poole, I think they're going to be expected to come in and contribute.
Those are my
soon.
Two picks,
you know,
too. There.
They're not being promised to start or anything, but they're guys that can come in and, you know, blend in the rotation a little bit and get on the field. Where Willie Bailey is a tall, lanky guy who's going to need a lot of work, you know, probably going to be a redshirt candidate. And, you know, and Raheem Ledbetter is, I mean, he's a good physical safety, but with the style of play that he likes to have, he's going to need to put on a little bit more size just to be successful doing what he wants to do. You know, Marcus May is a little bit more, you know, playmaker-type safety, where I always say Raheem Ledbetter is kind of like a really little linebacker that wanted to play linebacker but just became a safety because he wasn't quite big enough. And, you know, flies around the field and stuff, and that just might not cut it at the size he's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a little more raw. But Marcus May and Brian Poole, I mean, Florida's getting a very physical corner in Brian Poole. He gets overlooked sometimes with people, you know, waiting for Tracy Howard to come in. But, you know, he's carried his weight in everything he's done in these All-Star games and everything else.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say the All-Star game, the Under Armour game, we saw Marcus May and Brian Poole have incredible games that night. Brian Poole set a record. I think it was 90, his pick six, 90 yards or something like that. It was a UA record, UA game record, and Marcus May had it. He caused the first safety in UA game history, so both those guys already in the record books for that, and they had a huge game. And Marcus May, coming off a foot injury that ended his senior season, I think he's really excited to kind of come into Florida and make an impact very soon. And same thing with Brian. I think they're both really excited, and they both have the ability to definitely do something their freshman year for Florida.
May had actually gotten bumped up to outside linebacker for that game because of some weird personnel things they had going on. And, I mean, he didn't really seem to miss a beat playing against some of the top players in the country in that spot. Obviously, that's not a spot he's going to be playing in college.
You would think not,
It showed, I mean, A, that he was willing to do that and just go out there and play something that he never plays, and then B, that he was as, you know, effective as he was. And Brian Poole actually broke two Gators records in that game for the Under Armour game. The touchdown was 1 yard longer than Andre DeBose's touchdown, which was the longest. And then a Greg Luka favorite, that was the longest interception return by anyone, breaking Will Hill's record.
Oh, so, yeah, Will Hill. All right. Gotta love Will Hill. All right, and then, you know, you talk about May playing a little bit of linebacker. Watch the football team this season. Matt Elam was doing some of that. So they tend to move guys up and let them play against the run, so it could be a good fit there. Moving down the list a little bit, I see some linebacker depth, Antonio Morrison and Jeremy Powell, more D-line depth than Dante Phillips. And then we get to these two tight ends. We have Kent Taylor, and Colin Thompson. What does each one of them bring to the table, and how are they similar or different? I see there's a big weight difference here between
the two. Those two are a very interesting pair to put together. They're so different, even though they're the same position. You got Ken Taylor. He's more of a lean, longer build. And then Colin Thompson is just, like, an incredible blocker. So it's really interesting. They both have great hands, but they're interesting contrasts at the same position.
Yeah, they're absolute night and day.
Yeah.
When it comes to football players, it's the fact that they play the same position just shows, you know, the way the tight end position is evolving into two completely different directions.
Yes.
But, you know, Colin Thompson's actually the one out of those two, even though he's a little bit lower ranked on Rivals. He's the one that I see contributing more as a freshman just because,
I do too.
You know, Florida doesn't really have that blocking tight end right now. And he has the size for it already. He looks like a college football player right now. And I see him coming in and really making an immediate impact blocking on the run game and things like that, where Kent Taylor, you know, needs to put some weight on. His dad was an offensive lineman and has assured me that if, you know, there's going to be no weight problem there as far as the issues putting weight on. But if Kent Taylor is able to play as a freshman, you know, it's going to be out wide. I don't see him really coming in and being a traditional tight end in any sense of the word as a freshman. He's a receiver right now. I mean, he's built like a receiver.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like.
That's what his skill set is for right now, too.
That's what his skill set is. And, you know, that's going to work down the road. But I don't know if that works with him as a freshman. So I believe out of those two, you know, they're both good prospects. But I believe Colin Thompson's much more, you know, college ready at the moment for what he is being brought in to do.
Yeah, just going off the measurables and what you guys are telling me, I think Thompson has a chance to contribute. Because when Gerald Christian transferred, everybody kind of, you know, didn't make a lot of it. But he was the primary blocking tight end. And they didn't have a guy the rest of the season who could be both a blocking threat and a pass-catching threat. So, I mean, this could be that guy.
Yeah.
Moving down the list here, if let's say there's no Diggs, there's no Aguilar, none of these other big name receivers end up here. The top receiver recruit looks to be LaTroy Pittman. What do we know about him?
You know, he's a solid addition. He's like, solid is about the perfect word for LaTroy Pittman. He's not going to be very flashy. He's not, you know, any of these big playmakers that fans are going to drool over, like Nelson Aguilar or Stephon Diggs. But he's a very necessary addition to this class. He's, you know, just watching him play, I've gotten a chance to see him play more than anybody else this year just because he plays right down the road, you know, in Marion County. And, you know, he's a very physical receiver. He's got very good footwork, gets off the line well. And I think, you know, he is the kind of receiver that they need just to mix into the class. It will obviously be a failure if he's the only receiver they bring in this class because it's another year without any real playmakers. But, you know, definitely, you know, downfield blocking, effective as a possession type receiver, you know, good pickup. He's one of these guys that he was the first one to commit, and he would probably go to Florida as like a walk-on if they didn't. Like, I mean, he's just one of these guys that is overly joyed about coming and playing, and, you know, that could pan out possibly better than Trey Burton panned out as a guy that was overly...
You can only hope.
You can only hope.
I mean, if your goal is to be better than Trey Burton, you're not aiming high enough.
No, this is true. But LaTroy hasn't openly said that his goal is to be better than Trey Burton.
Right. We would hope not.
I think LaTroy is a guy who definitely can muscle his way through routes. He's a physical guy, and I think solid is, you definitely hit the nail on the head with that one. I mean, it would not be a good thing if he was the only guy who's coming in here because he's not a playmaker. He doesn't have crazy speed, and he's elusive, and he does a good job, but he's not the kind of things that most of the Gator Nation wants to see.
He's kind of the definition to me of what Muschamp has done well in this class, though, especially just because, you know, during Meyer's tenure, you saw the best and the worst of star chasing, where he brought in these crazy recruits that everybody got all excited about, and every now and then they panned out, and every now and then you get a 2009 class where, you know, they're all missing somewhere off playing, you know, community college ball or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, LaTroy's one of these guys that I really feel like, you know, could have fallen through the cracks before, and now it really seems like he's, you know, even though he did commit under Meyer, but he's just one of these necessary players that you're not going to get overly excited about bringing in, but I think he's a very necessary addition.
Yeah, but you definitely need him on your team. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Right, you look at the guys that they have right now, players like Andre DeBose and Quentin Dunbar, and the guys who are just deep threats, and if you bring in a guy who's more solid, that's always a good move. Getting towards the end of the list here, but we have three guys listed at defensive end. Brian Cox Jr., Alex McAllister, and Quintez Williams?
Williams.
So it seems that...
Quintez is Kelly Price.
Quintez, whatever works, but...
It's more fun that way.
It is more fun. It's much more fun than Quintez.
So of those three, who's kind of a buck prospect? Who's a defensive end prospect? Who's going to play some tackle? Where do these guys fit in from what you guys know about them?
Those three are a little bit of a mystery, to be completely honest.
I mean,
how exactly they're going to fit in. Alex McAllister is the project to end all projects. He is 6'7 and 212 pounds, if you want to talk about basketball players.
Right, yeah.
He is a basketball player. But he's a guy that, you know, him and Cox are both being told that they're, you know, either defensive end or buck linebacker type players. Mm-hmm. McAllister especially is being told he's a buck candidate. Neither are probably top options for what they're really looking for. They'd probably be much more excited about a Dante Fowler joining the class or somebody like that. But Cox especially, I think, can be very effective. He flew, you know, way under the radar. He moved to Florida from Ohio his senior year and, you know, almost immediately got hurt playing for St. Thomas Aquinas. But in the couple games he did play, he was very impressive. And obviously he's got the pedigree with his dad being, you know, Brian Middlefingers Cox.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know.
With the neck thing?
You know.
Yeah, I know this guy. Yep.
Yeah, so... he's got the pedigree there, and, you know, whether he ends up, you know, I think a lot of people would love to see him just be made into a big linebacker. You know, Florida doesn't get many of these, you know, 250-pound Alabama-type linebackers, and I think that's what a lot of people would get excited about with Cox. You know, right now he's getting told buck linebacker at the end, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And then Quintez Williams is, you know, another probably a little bit of a project. He's been committed for a long time, and a guy that, you know, is... mainly added for numbers, most likely. I mean, I could see him evolving into a better player, but at the moment, you know, for a while, Florida was just taking defensive linemen because they need people to practice with, quite honestly. And I mean, not saying that's all Quintez Williams is ever going to be good for, but I think, you know, he's definitely got a little bit of work to do before he's really ready. He had some troubles. He was supposed to be an early enrollee, which would have really given him a lot of help because he does need, you know, a little bit of work technique-wise and all that. It would have given him a lot of help to come in early, but he just wasn't able to do that. Mm. Some clearinghouse stuff with summer classes and all that.
All right. Well, we're not going to talk about the kicker, so we're all done with the player.
No,
we're not talking about the kicker. It's just not going to happen.
Austin Harden's he rules.
He's really nice.
He's the best.
You guys like the kicker?
I like him. I like him. He's a cool guy.
He's nice.
What's so cool about him? What do we need to know about this guy, if anything? Well, nothing. But what do you guys
want to
tell
me
about
the Under Armour game? That's what
you don't
need to know.
Did you watch the Under Armour game?
Of course not.
It was,
wasn't a good night.
He had a rough go at it in the Under Armour game the whole week, but you know, he's a powerful leg and a guy that they're excited about getting him to contribute on. He'll be the kickoff guy next year and, you know, field goals once Caleb Sturgis leaves, but he's actually, it's kind of strange that he has been involved in recruiting other players that he has. It's like, usually the kickers are kind of the outcast.
Yeah, they
he's kind of grouped in with all of them. Like, Marcus May is like, posting YouTube videos of him and all this stuff, and it's kind of strange to see that dynamic, but he's kind of said, he told you that he didn't want to just be known as, like, another kicker. He wanted to be part of the team, so.
Interesting.
I know Greg Luka doesn't like this argument.
I'm not a big fan of kickers in the sport of football.
He's a big guy on the team, though, like, I mean.
He played defensive back in high school.
He did.
Okay. Well,
I didn't mean physically
that.
Big.
He's an actual football player, then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've talked through each of these guys a little bit, I want to go back to some of the more general, bigger picture things. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but it seems like the recruits are seeing the Florida team that won national championships not long ago instead of the 7-6 team with the coach that hasn't proved he can win anything yet.
I think Muschamp has done a fantastic job of just kind of making this image of, like, this is what, like you said, selling the brand and not what's actually happening right now, you know? I think he's really gave these guys a kind of dream to look forward to, like, hey, you guys can come in and contribute and make this class and make this school great again, you know? And that's kind of what they're selling to other recruits, is saying, hey, let's build up this program again to what it used to be. And I think Muschamp's done a good job with, given what just happened this season, like, making them forget about that. I think he's done a good job at that.
I think it's a bigger picture issue of what college football overall is. You know, college football has kind of merged to where it's all about names. I mean, look at, like, Boise State. Boise State wins a lot of games, but if you look at the recruiting class, there's not one kid in the recruiting class that Florida would be like,
we would
really like him to be on the team.
Yeah.
They're not getting the big players, even though, you know, they're winning games. And the entire thing is, you know, through the 90s and through the Urban Meyer years, Florida built a name. And that's all they really have to sell, you know, players on this. Because players, they care about playing time, and they care about being on TV, and they care about going somewhere where it sounds cool to tell their friends they're going.
Right.
And that's, I mean, Florida is that for a lot of these guys, and I think that's why you're seeing, especially a lot of these out-of-state guys, because no matter what, it's going to sound cool to be going to Florida. Maybe some
That's how I got here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's how
I just want to go home to Connecticut and tell my friends I go to Florida.
Our own Greg Luca. And the three-star prospect out of Connecticut.
Right, right.
Scrappy as hell.
Aaron Hernandez and me just coming down here.
But, you know, and maybe that is why you're seeing more of these out-of-state guys coming in and being very interested, because maybe some of these insight guys do hear more about, well, Florida might sound cool, but they went 7-6 last year.
Yeah.
Maybe those are the guys that are hearing that, and that's why some of these in-state guys are going to Auburn or, you know, Bama or places like that.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it really doesn't hurt them overall, just because, you know, Muschamp has done such a great job of saying, you know, this is Florida. Like, it's going to be back to where it was. And, you know, we don't, you know, they almost play like a little bit of a, like Brian Poole told me last night, he said, you know, I don't even feel the need to, like, tell them they really need to come here anymore, because we're going to win national championships in a couple of years.
Huh.
And it's their loss if they, you know, it's, they're going to lose more than we're going to lose if they don't come here.
Right.
And that's, you know, maybe it's the little kid on the playground who keeps losing and keeps refusing to admit that he's going to lose. But, you know, whatever
it's something
it is,
they really
working.
Believe, yeah.
Whatever it is, it's working, because these kids legitimately feel like they're coming in and are, you know, coming into a national championship-type program, whether or not they're anywhere close to really being able to do that or not.
I think it's interesting to know also that, you know, Muschamp came from Texas before this, and Texas is kind of in a similar situation, or at least was. They this season they were better, but they were coming from some, you know, maybe that's kind of the image he sold at Texas, and I think it's interesting that he's taken that and also been able to make it work at Florida, where Texas, it's, if you go to high school in Texas, you want to play Texas football. So I think it's interesting that he's made that work at Florida, where Florida is not really the type of program that Texas is at all. So I think that's really interesting and kind of commendable on his part that he made it work.
The entire approach he's taken to it, too, is, like, it's a very aggressive style of recruiting where they kind of recruit narrowly. Like, they don't go after a ton of guys. Like, you'll see Bama just throw offers to everyone.
Yeah.
Like, every decent football player in America has an Alabama offer. And Florida isn't like that. And at the same time, they'll also play games where it's like, okay, well, you're going to commit now, or we're going to move on to somebody else. And to think of a 7-6, a team that was 7-6 last year,
they can make that kind of demand.
But they can still make that happen. It's kind of, you know, unbelievable.
It's crazy, yeah.
We might not know that much about what kind of head coach Will Muschamp's going to be right now, but I think he's proven this year that
he's definitely a recruiter.
In a very abrasive Muschamp kind of way, he's a very good recruiter.
Well, you mentioned the abrasive Muschamp kind of way. Do they kind of buy into that, him yelling at the sidelines and him swearing on national TV?
I think it's really interesting. I was just talking to Brian Cox, and he was telling me about how Muschamp gave him this ginormous hug, and he was like, it was the biggest hug I ever got in my life. It was weird, and I was like, Muschamp did that to you?
Right.
And so, like, it was just weird. I was like, that's really weird given his demeanor, because you see him on TV yelling on the sidelines, you know, people are like, oh, he makes refs cry, and he, like, then you see him, like, I don't know, it's, I would love to be in behind closed doors seeing what he says to these guys and how he treats them. I think they definitely buy into the whole hype of him, because, you know, right now he is kind of untested as a head coach, like you said. And I think they are kind of buying into the hype of, you know, what he's saying and, you know, his demeanor.
I mean, I'm sure he turns it on and off like everybody else, but just his sideline demeanor, I mean, I know I've been on, like, Twitter during games and stuff like that, and during Muschamp's worst outbursts, I've seen guys like, you know, Marcus May and all these guys being like, hell yeah, that's my coach, and that's why I'm going to Florida, and it's like, you know, maybe that's what they get into.
That's great. We kind of touched on, they built a program here with what they did during the Urban Meyer days, and now you just have to say the name Florida and people know. Is there a period of time it would take to unbuild that? And, like, even if they go 6-6 again, are we still at a point where it's Florida people are going to come here? Or is there concerns
question.
On the horizon at some point?
See, I always had that question during the Zook years. Like, the whole time Zook was here, you know, growing up in Florida, it was like Steve Spurrier was it, and he made Florida what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple years into Zook being at Florida, you're sitting there and you're like, can he just absolutely destroy this thing? Like, is this going to be like, Florida just goes back to being like Marshall or something? Like that's, it was kind of that attitude you started to get. And then obviously Urban Meyer comes in with the resurgence and adds on the titles and all that. You know, I just don't see it happening with the kind of players they're bringing in.
Yeah.
And, you know, regardless of whether or not this staff's ready, I think this staff can be ready, and I think Muschamp does have potential. I think he was thrown in, you know, a really tough spot, not only with the situation Urban left him, but also, I mean, he wasn't ready to be a head coach, and he's learning on the job right now what it takes to be a head coach at any level, and he's learning it in the SEC, which is, you know, just difficult in itself. So, I mean, possibly if you brought in somebody really bad and kept him for 4 years and he tore it down, and then you brought in somebody else who was really bad, I mean, I really think it would take a long time to just completely destroy this brand.
Yeah.
And be like, because you just don't see that happening. I mean, other than, unless it's NCAA violations or something like that, you really haven't seen that many programs over time rise and then completely fall off the map.
I don't think Muschamp's going to be that person either, because I think if he does end up being a dud, UAA is going to get rid of him, and you know, they're not going to let him destroy a program, especially after, given, you know, it's been built up a certain way. They don't want it to fall below a certain point. But yeah, I don't think Muschamp's going to be that guy either.
Yeah, that makes sense. We talked about some of the challenges he faced in his first year trying to recruit with only having been here for a couple of months. And even this year, he got another curveball when Charlie Weiss decided to leave and Brent Peace came in. How did that affect recruiting? I'm assuming with the offensive guys mostly.
I mean, considering there's a lot more defensive commits currently and a lot more, and they're more of their targets are offensive, it had potential to impact, but it didn't. Really, I mean, some people kind of, Diggs played the game of like, oh, I'm not going to consider them anymore because Charlie Weiss is gone, and Aguilar kind of said like he was waiting to see what the new offensive coordinator is going to be, but I think they did a good job bringing in Peace, and like, I don't think it's going to really change anyone's mind. I mean, Florida's still Florida, and it's not like they're totally redoing the entire offensive system. It's going to be pretty much the same old for these guys that have been told one thing by Charlie Weiss. I mean, some of the guys that were recruited by Charlie Weiss, like Colin Thompson, you know, you think they would be the ones to, you know, that would affect the most, but he was totally solid after it, and he was very supportive of the new hire, so it was kind of interesting. You would think it would affect them more, but it didn't at all.
Yeah, I can say the Charlie Weiss thing was almost kind of like a bottle rocket thing, like when it first, like the first couple of days of it, everybody's like, oh, this is really surprising. I don't know what to think right now and all this, which is can be expected when that's the guy who's been recruiting you. But, you know, in the long run, maybe it gave him, you know, gave him a period of a month or so where everything was very uncertain. They didn't know, you know, who the offensive coordinator was going to be, and that halted them a little bit with the undecided guys. But the fact that they were able to bring in, you know, Brent Peace, regardless of how he ends up working out, a guy that they can at least point to and be like, hey, look what he did, you know, here, regardless of whether or not he actually did what he did at Boise State or you know, the things ahead, all they have to do is say, hey, have you seen Boise State's offense? Well, that's what we're going to do here.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's definitely helped them. Bringing Peace in has gotten a lot of guys back into the game. The only people I would say they've really lost out on at all maybe is they've maybe lost their chances with a couple offensive linemen who they were long shots to get in the first place, guys like Avery Young and Kyle Murphy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, probably aren't going to end up in this class anymore. But were they ever really going to end up in this class?
Yeah.
Probably not either.
It's kind of negotiable.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't think, you know, Peace has definitely helped them. I mean, anyone who was understandable as hire at all at offensive coordinator was going to help them just to get stability in and, you know, have somebody to send to their houses and say this is the offense we're going to run.
Right.
It's interesting to note that he's also made a lot of trips, and now Florida's actually pushing for quarterbacks, and they just had, you know, a quarterback commitment, and they were not even going to have a quarterback commitment. So it's interesting to note that he also brought that new aspect in to this offense.
He definitely put a much bigger emphasis on we would like a quarterback in this class, which was something that Weiss...
They originally had not even had one on their board at all.
Well, yeah, Weiss had his guy, Jacoby Brissett, was here, so there was no question what was going to happen there, but... It's interesting to me because it speaks even more to your guys' point about this being a brand thing and about Muschamp more so than the offensive coordinator, because to my opinion, it seems like a guy like Charlie Weiss, who's had all the success he's had and has the Super Bowl rings, would be a draw in and of himself, but it didn't change anything that he's gone because it's so much about Florida and about Muschamp.
Well, I expected, I mean, honestly, the first thing I thought of when I heard the Weiss news was Kent Taylor because, you know, you were there at his commitment. He sat and he told us over and over again that the reason he was going to Florida was because of Charlie Weiss's, you know, history with tight ends. And so I'm thinking, all right, you know, this could be one of the situations.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, these kids are also generally, you know, smart enough to look at the situations and understand that these coordinators aren't you know, guaranteed to be there for long, especially if they do well.
That's
or
true.
Whatever. So yes. You kind of, I mean, it's kind of recruiting 101. Your high school coach teaches you, you know, pick a program, pick a school you want to go to, pick a team you want to play for. Don't necessarily put it all on these coaches who are promising you the world right now, because their goal ultimately, unless they're the head coach of that school, is not to be there for much longer.
And even then, a lot of those schools, those guys still want to move up.
Yeah,
obviously
exactly.
Not here, but
yeah.
So, all right, last thing I have for you guys is, with maybe Weiss isn't that significant, but who are the assistants that are on the staff right now who have played a big role in recruiting and have helped them land a certain number of guys?
I'm going to go with Derek Lewis. Like, that was the first name that popped in my head. He's the main reason a lot of the guys from North Carolina committed. And, I mean, he's been everywhere. Like, he's everywhere. Everyone I've talked to, they're saying that he's just been there, and he's, like, one of the guys that's always there, always talking to them, always reassuring them. And, you know, having that relationship with recruits is a big thing. You know, even if it is an assistant coach and, you know, the whole... They move on and things. I think he gave a lot of confidence to a lot of people.
I mean, result wise, right off, you gotta go to DJ Durkin. You know, Humphreys and guys like that. Generally, he's been the main recruiter on a lot of those. But if you flip over, I mean, a lot of these things, because people are gonna credit DJ Durkin because it's the guys that he has targeted end up in the class. A lot of times, that's a crapshoot to me. Like, I mean, you can only do so much to actually get these kids to commit, and it's one of these things where if they don't commit, this guy needs to be fired. He can't recruit, all these things. And if they do commit, you know, Aubrey Hill is a guy who, to me, has always been so steady in recruiting South Florida in the areas that he recruits, the receivers. And, you know, this year he didn't have the best year pan out. Florida didn't get a lot of the South Florida guys that they were targeting other than, you know, maybe, you know, Tracy Howard on signing day and people like that. But to me, that's a little bit too big of a judge, just because he does build these, you know, relationships. And at the end of the day, whether or not the kid wants to come to Florida, is that, you know, entirely Aubrey Hill's fault?
Yeah.
You know, I would vote no. But to me, DJ Durkin and Aubrey Hill are both very, very strong recruiters, and that's pretty much the biggest thing they bring to the staff right now is position coaches.
All right, so we've talked this whole thing to death for the most part, but I will ask you guys for one bold prediction as we head into signing day, and then we'll let you get out of here.
Prediction. I'm not really sure if anything I can say is super bold.
I will go bold prediction, and I'm really expecting this to be a very good day for, you know, Florida. I'm expecting it to pan out the way they wanted to, which, you know, if you're asking what that means, I think they get Stephon Diggs, I think they get Nelson Aguilar, I think they get Tracy Howard.
I think
that and too. I think it's, you know, a huge Stephon Diggs isn't gonna be National Signing Day, but you're talking, you know, an influx of five stars coming into this class that they were kind of waiting out on. You know, all the signs seem to be pointing towards those guys being, you know, pretty good Florida wins and things like that. So, you know, if the names that people are going to get excited about, I think they, for the most part, end up here. I think, you know, Darius Hamilton could as well. But the three that I'm really going to focus on and say that they will be Gators, you know, National Signing Day and beyond, is Tracy Howard, Diggs, and Aguilar.
That's, I mean, I was going to say that, but I'm trying to think of something more bold. But, I don't know. I think my boldest prediction, but it's kind of obvious at this point, is that Florida's definitely going to be a top five class.
Yeah.
But that's already happened,
right.
So.
Right, good enough for me, though. It's
is
fine.
Is that bold enough
fine.
For the guy who doesn't pay attention to recruiting?
Yeah, dude, I'll make a bold prediction. Dante Fowler, he's going to
commit.
There you go.
All right, there we go.
Yep. I know nothing about this man, but
go
he'll be
Greg
here.
Go Greg Luca.
All right, so with that, we'll let you guys get out of here. We're going to pull a BS report today and split this into part one and part two. I'm really excited about
that.
For the first time in Alligator Sports history, but...
talk about, like, hipster culture and bad movies and reality shows.
Yeah, I mean...
There's your BS report.
Why not? So, yeah, we're going to get Watson Booth in here, but thank you guys for coming on today.
All
right. Oh, no, wait, before we get out of here, Holt, you can talk about what's going on over at Rivals, where you are. What's going on over there? Talk about your site.
Yeah, obviously, I'm going a little bit crazy from now until signing day, trying to keep up with all this stuff. Got the phone with me right now. But, yeah, InsideTheGators.com. I cover recruiting over there, and... costs money sometimes to read, so if you would like to, you know, pay for my food and my drinks, that would be great. I would really appreciate it. But yeah, just check out InsideTheGators.com. That's where I cover this crazy thing that we call recruiting.
All right. Well, then thank you guys for coming in today. We'll see you on next time. Hopefully, maybe within a week or two, we can do a little recap.
Absolutely. Sounds good, Lucas.
All right. Talk to y'all then.